Welcome to another episode of Our Blue Bahamas, where we promote the conservation of the Bahamian marine environment that sustains our way of life. Today we are going to be talking about plastic tide and the fight against marine pollution with our guest from BeachLink 242 on the importance of beach cleanups and the dangers of marine pollution in the Bahamas. We have Ava Turnquest from BeachLink 242 and Ariana Wells from BeachLink 242. And we also have in studio with us Jasmine Cawley, our outreach officer at the Bahamas Reef Environment Educational Foundation. So we're going to jump into it. We want to learn a little bit more about BeachLink 242. So Ariana, how was this organization started?
So BeachLink was started because I was walking down the beach in Eleuthera, and of course it was beautiful and clean and pristine, and I was honestly thinking about how to unite Bahamians and how to get people to come together regardless of age or religion or nationality or any socioeconomic background. And I thought that perhaps we could do that through uniting people through the shared spaces. And so I reached out to my good colleague and friend, Ava Turnquest, and also another project manager named Samia McLean. And I asked them if they were interested in perhaps coming together to run some community beach cleanups in order to unite people.
All right, sounds good. So we want to talk a little bit about what marine pollution looks like in the Bahamas and how it impacts us both, how it impacts us as humans and also the marine life. So when you go out there on beach cleanups, and we know Jasmine, as being in outreach and education, you've also participated in numerous beach cleanups. So you know, just for everyone to together, what are some ways that we what are some things that we find on the beach that are during these beach cleanups?
Okay, well, great question, Crystal. When we do have these beach cleanups, we do have our beach cleanup guide, brief beach cleanup guide, and we take a note of all of the items that we clean up in various groups. And a lot of the pollution is a lot of bottles, a lot of bottle caps, cans, and all of items from fast food restaurants and stuff like that. So whatever persons would carry on the beach, possibly on their Sunday or Friday or just, you know, enjoying the beach, they tend to leave a lot of their trash behind.
Yeah. And Ariana, what are you and Ava, what has been your experience?
Yeah, so we definitely find a lot of bottles and bottle caps. We were doing a shoot once, and we actually have this one shot of a girl who picked up maybe like 20 or 30 bottle caps from a specific brand. And she was just holding them, and it was such a profound moment for me, because it's like, perhaps this organization should be held accountable for the trash that is being left on the beaches because of their brand. I think that there's a lot that they could do to step forward and kind of help to solve this issue of trash being left behind. And I would like to open the door for these companies who know that their trash is being left on the beaches. Come forward and get involved in community cleanups. There are a lot of organizations that do them. BeachLink is a great one to get involved in. Brief as well. I know you guys have cleanups, and I know more recently we've been solidifying a partnership with you all. And so there are opportunities and people for these organizations to reach out to when you see and know that, you know, perhaps your items are being left on the beach. There is accountability there, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine it does take a lot of people to pull off the beach cleanup. Is there like a minimum or a maximum amount of people that you need to conduct a beach cleanup? And how do you get volunteers? How do you like round up the volunteers?
I think the general rule of thumb is when more than one are gathered, or when more than two are gathered, it's now a beach cleanup. I think that when people think about community service or think about giving back, it always they always think first about like a structure, like it has to be something super formal, like this is a beach cleanup. But no, if you visit a beach and on your way back to your car you pick up some items that you see that should be in the trash and you don't just leave them there, kudos, you just did a beach cleanup, right? I think there is no limitations. Like if each of us in our personal lives just commit to not leaving anything behind. It's like, if you see something, say something. If you see a piece of trash, just pick it up, you know? And that one thing that you do over time, if we get everyone to do that, then we, the stress or the strain on these or the critical need to have these like formalized beach clinics wouldn't be so as intense. But there's definitely no rules on the number. Like, if you and your friends are out there, you're doing a beach cleanup, you can call it a beach cleanup. I'm going to like liberate you right now and say that the power is in you to host your own beach cleanup and brief as a guide.
Yeah. And I love that you said that it doesn't have to be a formalized structure, because what I find is when we're on these field trips and when we're to these marine ecosystems, 10 out of 10 times you'd find some part of pollution, and that's part of our curriculum in teaching kids how to gain an appreciation for these marine ecosystems. And there's always one child, I can almost guarantee, that is going to be picking up trash the whole way through before we even get to the, hey, you know, pollution and how it impacts our ecosystems. And, you know, and I really think that's the best time when I use like positive reinforcement to just say, hey, you know, reward that behavior right there and then. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And what you and Ava talking about this makes me think about beach cleanups in our cultural context in a way. I don't know if it's a new thing or something we've always done, but it seems to be a staple for community service hours.
Yeah.
Do you think, because there are always kids calling, and I'm sure you got these calls and these emails and messages, I want to do community service hours. Are you having any beach cleanups? And they always, do you see this as a positive thing? Or do you think that this is just like a
self-feeding cycle? Yeah, like, we're like, leaving the trash so we have community service hours
later.
Negative?
Like, maybe, because in one sense, it's like, oh yeah, the students want to do community service. Yeah, this is great. And they prefer to do beach cleanups. Like, they want to be outside in the sun picking up trash on the beach. Weird, but cool. Do you think that this is like a positive thing? Or do you think it's just something where people do it out of convenience and they're not really thinking about what they're doing? How do you, from your work with volunteers and people on the beach doing cleanups, especially students, have you seen like a genuine interest?
So something that we do at our Beach Link cleanups is we open by stating the intention, and we also close by stating the reason. We have to talk about, why are we doing these cleanups? Because yes, it's convenient, but we can't just normalize and standardize as something that's simple. No, you are literally coming together to preserve a shared space. Like, that's something that is sacred. And so we communicate that each time. So you might come out thinking you're just going to go pick up some trash, but you're leaving with a wealth of knowledge about why this is important and why building community is important and why meeting these people and understanding and is important. So I think it has its advantages and disadvantages. But at a beach link cleanup, we want to make sure that people leave with education and information about why they're doing what they're doing. It's not just performative because you need community service hours. You're not just ticking a box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, what I like to say is two words, sweat equity. When it has kids or anybody, adults, they dedicating their Saturdays, their rest time, into spending a few hours getting sweaty, getting in the dirt, and cleaning up, it actually does this thing where it kind of bring a consciousness to how we consume our waste. You know what I mean? And I don't think if there was any litter bugs, depending on your sweat equity that you put in a beach cleanup, I think that really reshapes your mind. And so, I mean, I see that as a possible advantage as a good starting point into getting into the conversations of conservation.
And I think it has its benefits, like you said, when you talk about, you know, health too, and, you know, going out and doing something positive in the community, because it does have it does ingrain in you that, hey, you know, all of this litter is out here. I'm cleaning this up because someone, not all the time, because sometimes it blows out of garbage bins, but somebody probably decided to toss this out without thinking about it, right? Or toss it out carelessly. So it makes you think that, okay, I don't want to do this again. I am not going to be one of those people contributing to this thing because of, you know, what we're doing. And also, have you seen, like, on your beach cleanups, like, repeat volunteers, like, people who come back and say, wow, that was a great workout, or that was a great, you know, like, what is the message that you get back from the people who attend these events?
I feel like there's a sense of accomplishment that comes through. There's a sense of camaraderie. We really try and sort of frame these cleanups, at least for us, as, like, a link up. As like a lime, a party, like this is not work. This is coming out to have fun, connect with your friends, and do something for the community. And I think, which goes back to the point before about whether or not, you know, we're sort of desensitized to the beach cleanups because it's just so par for the course. I think it's really 6.5 dozen. To me, I think the intent is important. But the actions are really, really, really cool too. Like, it's great that we have built up this almost like knee-jerk reaction. Like, if all else fails, BAME is going to clean a beach. You know what I mean? And I think it gives us a great opportunity now to have such a common base understanding. Everyone, you know, you don't have to go in from the ground and be like, teach people why. Like, we know this is something that we need to do. This is like sweeping our front porch, you know? And now what it gives us this opportunity to dig deeper in terms of bringing in that intentionality and sort of framing it and going and taking it a step beyond. And I think that's where the data collection comes in. That's when the sort of ancillary activities. So after we get you through the pipeline of having a beach, cleaning up a beach, now how about we adopt a beach? How about we look at the health and the viability of that beach? What are the threats to that beach? Is it undergoing erosion? Is there encroaching development? How is this beach being protected? And how is me removing the pounds and pounds of branded materials and items, party items, off the beach? Like, how is that directly impacting the health of this beach? I think a couple of years ago, Mark Daniels told me, I'm just plugging, hey Mark, told me about Goodman's Bay. He's like, oh, sometimes I just come here and clean it. I play soccer here. I snorkel here. Like, sometimes if I have time, I just come out and clean the beach because this is my beach, right? And I think, like, going back to that sort of sovereignty and ingraining that into Bahamians, and that's sort of what Beach Link is about too, beach access. Because if you feel like the best beaches on New Providence or the best beaches in the Bahamas are for you and they're your beaches, you'll work to keep them clean. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you have just the coastal slim pickings of the leftovers that nobody, the beaches that can't be commodified or commercialized, they don't look as good on a postcard, so the hotels will let you have it. That's a different sort of mindset, as opposed to all of this is literally mine. And I want to ensure that this is a representation of me. And we are really good at doing that for Bahamians in our culture. And it's like going in now and looking at the gaps and like sort of crystallizing it, like bringing it full circle. Because we are so passionate about our culture and so passionate about our environment. And like just taking that same language and then going deeper, you know, it's an opportunity to go deeper.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That really drives me into the next question I have. And I want to add, I want to focus a little bit more on kids. And I know BREEF is the Bahamas Reef Environment Educational Foundation, very heavily into conservation for not just the general public, but for youth too. So Jasmine, how does BREEF incorporate marine pollution education into its school programs and field trips?
Well, as we know, I think at BREEF, we have this acronym called CHOP IT. And, you know, Crystal, we can attest that we had CHOP IT like every day. And it's just an acronym of the various marine threats to the marine environment, which is climate change, habitat destruction, overfishing, and then the P is for pollution, and then I is invasive species, and T, trade. But the P, that CHOP IT, is a part of every single activity, whether it's a presentation, whether it's a mangrove tour or a snorkel. CHOP IT is also pollution is a very integral part of our curriculum. And what I like about what you asked previously in reference to is there like a cascading effect. as we see at briefs, you know, sometimes it'll be a person just wanting to get community service hours. Then they were like, okay, now can I volunteer for the public snorkel? Then, oh, now I want to do a YRE entry or different programs, what we do have at brief. So it does open a door for opportunities for kids. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Anything? Do you see a lot of kids, Ariana, at your beach cleanups, or what is it usually the age ranges?
Absolutely, we see a lot of kids. A special shout out to the Girl Guides because they love to come out on cleanups and they do an amazing job every time. Also, Ava's kids at Sustainable Me, they come out and they do an amazing job. The Leadership Academy also sends out a group of kids, and so we're very thankful for all
Jack
of the.
Was it Jack Hayward last year? The group, or was that CV? There was a high school group.
Oh, C.I. Gibson as well has been an amazing partner. Like, they're incredible. Yeah. And that's really driven by their teacher. Her name is Miss Smith, I believe. I really wish I could remember. Mm-hmm. But she's incredible. The science teacher at C.I. Gibson, she's an incredible person. She made sure she had a bus to bring out all the kids to one of our cleanups one time, and it was incredible. So it's really educators like this that we're very, very thankful for. But mostly high school students. We do see some younger kids come out sometimes, and then when we do that, we ensure that there's adequate supervision. So that would be supervisors outside of our usual BeachLink supervisors. For example, Girl Guides, a lot of them have their designated chaperones that'll come out and assist as well. So we're very thankful for them. As for an age range, I would say like high schoolers.
Yeah, our rate mostly high schoolers, but we find that younger parents, and we get parents coming like, my kid wants to do this, but they'll just bring them out, you know, like, so families.
Yeah. And I love that you touched on the school, like bringing out a whole school busload of children. That is not an easy job.
Yeah, okay? Exactly.
Especially
it requires
to coordinate.
A lot, yeah.
And Jasmine knows about it. You guys know about it. So how important is the support from parents and teachers when it comes to these type of marine conservation activities?
Well, I love working with kids because, you know, they have this passion, right? But the parents and the teachers provide the means.
Yes.
So they're like you say, organizing the bus and, you know, bringing them out there and showing them that it's important. So that's why I do love our Eco Schools program where, and, you know, the schools having their Eco Club where it have these teachers who are insanely passionate, and they help provide the opportunities for the kids to express their creativity, their passion for conservation. So
and what are the long-term effects of plastic waste in our marine ecosystem? So we've covered mostly all of the things on the surface, but what are the long-term effects? Like, why are we doing this in the first place?
I think it's twofold, right? It's a lot. It's like we're doing this heal the planet and to heal ourselves, right? So yes, pollution is a problem, but also consumerism is the problem, capitalism is the problem, waste is the problem, inequality is the problem, and so whatever we, and like you say, it's like it's a surface level. When we get deeper on it, deeper into the ocean and deeper into sort of the way that we live, we need to change. Like, everything in our environment is showing us that we're in complete misalignment with nature, with the order of life, and what's needed to sustain life for us as humans, and for the animals that we share the world with. And I think the long term effects are species being threatened, the viability of our marine ecosystems, our ability to continue to fish in these waters, which, you know, I don't think, I mean, there's a lot of panic right now about the global trade situation, and I don't think anyone is ready at this current moment to become a vegan, even though it's great. I feel like the long-term reasons are we're trying to be here for a long time, a good time and a long time. We want to enjoy this world, you know, not just for the maybe 80, 90 year span, and, you know, people are living longer. You don't want to live longer on a dying planet, you know? So, like, I feel like the long-term issues are the health of the food that we eat from the oceans, the quantity and the quality of the food, of the marine ecosystem, and then also our our health, like being able to look out and see beauty in the world is one of the best or easiest release of oxytocin. Like we need to have, I think we take for granted how much we are surrounded by beauty. Can you imagine, like, there are places in the world where they don't see the sun for months. There's, you can be in Canada right now and, you know, be waiting for a sunny day, and we have that on tap. And what are some of the things that we can do to ensure that we maintain that, the longevity of it?
Very true, Ariana. You look like you're itching to speak. And I wish the listeners could see the amount of head nods while people was talking. Everybody's just like, mm-hmm.
Definitely. But I was on the beach this weekend with my friend Kev, and when we got there, there was a huge party happening on the beach, which was beautiful to see. Kids, adults, everyone, very family fun, play day, love it, right? And as we were walking back, the party was over and all we saw was trash on the beach, unfortunately. So Kev and I very quickly, we cleaned up after the people that left the trash on the beach. And as we were cleaning, Kev made the comment, shout out Kev, right? But he said, this is why there's a lock on Sun Fun Beach. And that, unfortunately, is very true. Because we hear about, we see the trash, but then we also hear about the break-ins that happen on Cabbage Beach, for example, and why that gate is locked. So, like was said earlier, like these beaches are a representation of us, and it can't be said that, oh, this is how Bahamians treat the beaches. So for me, that's why we started BeachLink, so that the beaches can truly be a reflection of us, so that we can have a responsibility and show people the responsibility that they have and the role that they play in actually taking care of our shared spaces. Mm. Because we don't want people to look at our beaches and think this is how Bahamians treat their beaches.
Yeah, very true.
And then when we look at the perspective that we're an island nation, and when we think about one piece of plastic, it can take hundreds of years to break down. And when you think that one bottle into the ocean takes 100 years to break down. And then when it breaks down, it's microplastics. And then if you're listening to the news and reading up on these scientific articles, you know that these microplastics are becoming in our bodies because we eat a lot of marine species. We are a snapper, our conch. And when these end up in the food chain, they're ending up in our bodies and they're having serious health impacts. So when we think about trash, is also we got to think about, okay, yeah, that's one bottle, but that bottle is going to be in the ocean for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Very true. And also with to Ariana's point, like from what I'm hearing between you and Ava, and Ava and Jasmine, is that we kind of need to reinforce this culture. And so that goes back to the teaching the students and supporting the students, that we need to create this culture of us leaving the beach clean when we go to the beach. And, you know, like we have like very active times during the year, right? Especially coming up on summer, you know, summertime, everybody wanna have beach fun, you know, but you have to think about, you know, what you're gonna do. And unfortunately, we live in a country where sometimes the garbages get piled up with trash really quickly, especially during Easter, Christmas, summer, when people may be having more beach activities. So in that same thought, maybe we need to rethink how we prepare our beach picnic basket, right? Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we have our beach bags that we take to the beach along with the food, that big bag of chicken, right? And all these other items you'd be taking on the beach, probably some bags to clean up just in case there's no trash around or the trash is full. We have to rethink how we prepare for a beach party. So those are some other cultural shifts that we may need to start looking into, especially as we go into, we kind of like shift into this changing world, like you mentioned, Ava, where there's so much going on right now.
It requires, and I think, just so you to, on your part, mm-hmm. it requires real radical thinking about policy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, I love what you said, like maybe we should prep, and you were saying prep the picnic basket. I'm thinking maybe we should prep the beaches.
Right.
Maybe we should provide, we know that there's going to be traffic, we know the beaches that are going to be hot spots. How are we elevating that experience? Like, it can't be that by noon all the garbages are full, because we know that beach has has like, that's just the first half. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be a second half of traffic.
Yeah.
And do we need to look at how these beaches are cleaned and not in a way that only serves the point of giving people jobs? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the purpose of the job? It's not just so that someone can have a job. It's so that this beach can be cleaned in a way that it does not ensure that the pollution is not sitting on the beach, right? So if you only clean the beach at 8 a.m., but the big traffic is at 12, that's all day this pollution, this trash mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. is waiting until another 8 a.m. when we know that dogs, when we know that the high tide, yeah. when we know that all these things. So how are we pivoting now to make the actions that we're doing actually fit the problem?
I think I don't know if we really think about it too much, but it does require strategic planning.
Yeah.
Which is so crazy. You think about, we're monitoring the beaches or we're in charge of looking over the beaches, but you know, it does require a little bit more thought, because I didn't even think about what you just said. And I know that they have thought about it, because in the past we used to have like these barrels or these yes. bins for collecting garbage. But now they've reinforced it with a metal structure. And yeah. I'm thinking that's probably because of the the wind or.
But not just that. Like, I noticed that we're moving away, like in beach cleanups, like just the language of beach cleanups is changing now to where like we're discouraging the use of trash bags, plastic bags, and asking people to when they come to cleanups to bring buckets, mm-hmm. right? And like, let's think about like, we're not there yet. Yeah. We're not there at a place to tell people, oh, bring a bucket with you to take your trash mm-hmm. off the beach and put it into the thing. That we're not there. We're simply not there. But how are we moving there? And mm-hmm. what are the gaps mm-hmm. do we need to ensure that now everyone is on the bucket level and using a trash plastic bag is being shamed, and we haven't even got people to completely just clean up the beach yet, but it's moved already, and that's the world, right? Yeah. You know, I just learned how to use, you could say I just learned how to use a phone, and now we're an iPhone 16. Like, yeah, yes. The world is changing, but how are we equipping? It can't be, that's why we elect governments. That's why I elect a representative. So while I'm doing my day-to-day life, someone is thinking about the bigger picture and looking at all our actions holistically and saying, well, we need to divert from doing this to doing this. I'm not saying that we have the answer at BeachLink, but I feel like it requires more than just trying to get an individual or trying to get the consumer to change a behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't, and in an environment where we say we have all these priorities, it should not, the onus should then not be on the individual, but on the organization, right? So that's going back and saying, look, your brand is on the beach consistently. In fact, you're advertising to take your brand to the beach. That's what you want your consumers to do. You want them to enjoy this mm-hmm. at the beach. How are you providing a life cycle for your product? Yeah. Can your product be recycled? It's going to the beach. Is there? Mm-hmm. Do you have a beach collection station yeah. where I can just drop these bottles in, yes. right? Why, this is the type of, that's what I'm saying, like radical policy, it's mm-hmm. what's needed. Not, you know, I feel like Brief is doing an amazing job in education. And yes, we're catching them when they're young and making plastic warriors. But what about the people between ages 40 to 65 who have all the economic power, who have all the legislative and control? Like, where's the radical policy change and shift from them? Because we still have the 30 years. You know, my kid is 9, and he'll be on you if he sees you throw something in the trash. Like, I can't even flick something off my hand. He'd be like, what was that? Mm-hmm. Right? I'm like, I swear it was nothing. Yeah. But he's not going to be able to vote for another 10 years. Are we going to wait 10 years for these mm-hmm. superpower kids? Yeah. You know, because we have so much great mm-hmm. coming up, right? Are we going to just wait for them to solve it? Or like, we need radical change and radical yeah. policy. And that's what we should be asking of our leaders now, you know?
And that's very true. And I think, you know, like, if you want to be held accountable, just tell a kid.
Yeah.
A child yeah. yes. will keep you we'll on your toes. They will tell you. Ah. I told my niece that I was eating chips, and she was like, that's not healthy. So that's not healthy. And I said, well, I drank some water too. Well, that's healthy. So it's like they keep you accountable. But I don't want, what we don't want to do, we have to be very careful about this too. What we don't want to do is have these children grow up under us, and then over time get weary and lose yeah. lose morale, like lose crazy. Morale and they, you know, while they're young, they're very upstanding, they want what's best, they know what's right, and then over time we can't be the example. So we have to be very, very conscious of that. And I think in that way, we as parents, teachers, adults could take responsibility and try to live by what we're preaching so that it reinforces to the children when they grow up that, oh, this is, we do it this way when we go on the beach. Mm-hmm. When we do beach, we always bring a bucket to collect our trash and we dispose it, you know, at the nearest waste bin or wherever else, right? So that would be like a standard for, or like a way of life or a cultural thing for students as we grow up. So that's great. And while we're wrapping up, I just want to go around and get like the final words or thoughts from everybody, starting with Jasmine.
Okay, well, I think it's such an important thing you just said, the last point in bridging the generations, in getting in attacking this problem with beach pollution. So yeah, it's great that it's having a lot of kids getting involved in cleanups, but then also we have to live and be the example by advocating for these policy changes.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to encourage people to get involved with BeachLink. We have opportunities for literally everyone. If you're a funder or someone that is responsible for putting trash on the beach, I mean, we have opportunities for you too. BeachLink has so many ideas and concepts that we would love to execute, so the door is open. Please reach out to us. Please join us on our cleanups. We have annual events. We have one coming up this year, so you can follow BeachLink Bahamas on Instagram and other social medias.
Yeah, beachlink242.com.
Yes, the website, beachlink242.com, in order to keep up with us. And we hope to see you out on one of our cleanups, or many of our cleanups.
Ava?
Thank you so much, Crystal, for having us. It's always good to get in discussion with you fellow passionate people.
Of course, we
just like to encourage everyone to, you know, try and remove the stigma from it. The stigma from being someone that is passionate and picks up trash. It's okay. You know, and it's also okay to not be that person, right? So I feel like there's something special about just doing what you can from where you can and just trying. So yeah, maybe you didn't make it out to a beach cleanup, but on your way to work or on your way to your car, you noticed there was some trash by your car and you just picked it up and threw it in the trash. You know, there's, take the stigma out and the sort of pump out of, you know, because people like to, it makes you feel better. Like, I'm so much better than you. I clean the beaches. Yeah. You know, like, but it actually does make you feel better than people. So I say do it. It's free. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Get some of that boost.
I mean, you know, I'm not saying that you're better than, but
you know, I mean, if you wake up and you decide to take like a pound of trash off the beach, you, my friend, are better. Mm-hmm. And I just want to encourage everyone to just try and be better every day.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree with you, Ava. I just want to leave with some statistics, right? Over 8 million tons of plastic enter the oceans every year. And plastic pollution kills thousands of marine animals annually, including, guess what? Our favorite food, fish, right? And also seabirds and turtles. So the Bahamas, with its vast coastline and tourism-based economy, we are especially vulnerable to marine debris. And I cannot drive this point down even more. So thank you so much for joining us. To follow us, continue to follow us on our social media at Brief242. You can also follow BeachLink Bahamas at BeachLink Bahamas on social media and at BeachLink242 on their website. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be here once again next same time, same place next week. So please listen in again. Thank you.